All right, it is 1 p.m. on Thursday, February 25th, 2016. My name is Carrie Dalton. I'm a Roanoke College student here with Trish Valentine at the Bentel Library located in Salem, Virginia. I'm conducting this oral history as a public record for the community. One of the first questions we were asked in our class was, what pronoun do you identify yourself with?
The pronoun is the way I'm dressed. If I'm dressed and presenting femme, then I definitely want to be she, okay, and her. I don't want to be he and or yet anything else. And if I'm dressed as male, I want to be, you know, identified as male. So the pronouns, I would like to match the presentation.
Okay.
And even transgender people, among other transgender people, slip up all the time, so it doesn't. Don't get too offended. Don't offend yourself, or don't be too. If you use the wrong pronoun, I'm not going to be offended.
Okay. That's my biggest fear.
No, out in public, you know, if you were sitting around a table and then the waitress was there or somebody's around there, it's really nice to have the right pronoun. And it's heaven when a waiter comes up and says, "Ladies, what can I get you?" You know, then you're really okay.
Yeah. Why did you agree to participate in the project?
Mainly because anything that gives people who are not transgender a better understanding of what transgender is, anything like that, I have to. I just have to. I'm kind of of the opinion, I'm going to attack everybody one at a time. I'm not going to convince a whole crowd of people, but if I can be nice to people and they can see me as transgender and they like me and they get along, that's just one more step. I'm put one more person on this side of the right side of history, you know. So I just want to share with the objective of bringing people to be more accepting of people who are different than they are. You know, even gays and lesbians don't. Some just don't want anything to do with us. Some don't mind, but they don't understand. So anybody I can meet is fine.
Do you think you were talking about gays and lesbians sometimes not accepting your group, transgender groups?
Yeah, because one of the things, I think they've struggled a lot, and they've done a lot in their struggles. And sometimes they feel that the transgender, the T, on LGBT, is kind of riding on their coattails. Okay? Just like the blacks do not like for a lesbian, an LGBT community to say, we want our civil rights too. No, civil rights are black and white. You know, they, so sometimes they're being discriminatory against the LGBT community because they've been through the struggle, they've gained acceptance, and I guess they resent us because they've had the hard battles, I guess, the real hard battles. But it's just strange. You know, everybody's looking for somebody to look down on. I'm looking for somebody to look up to. I'm always, you know, I'll put it this way. I was president of my own company for many years. My business card never had the word president on it, okay? It had the word associate. I'm not into titles. I'm just into accepting people. So.
That's good. So that's what you'd like to gain out of this, is just to say that that everybody's pretty much the same. Everybody has their own same battles. And
well, you know, I'm sure if you drop a bunch of marbles on this table and you figure out how far they are from where you dropped them, it's going to form a bell curve. So there are very manly men and there are very feminine females, and they kind of sit here. And as you move away a little bit, then you find a certain man is a little bit more feminine. You find a woman has a little bit more masculinity. Until finally you find a woman who has a lot of masculine and identifies as masculine. You find a man who is feminine and identifies as feminine. So you get this bell curve. And then, so, you know, think about this. Think how lucky you are to be born in America. I mean, just, and then think about how lucky we are to be born at this time in America. So, or just, a lot of things are just by luck. You know, I'm blessed by being transgender. I love being transgender because I know a lot about the feminine side of things. I don't pretend I'll ever know what a woman knows, but I want to be woman-like, but I know I'll never be a woman. Okay, so I just think everybody has something about them that's a little bit different than everybody else. And why you should look down on somebody because of that is beyond me. So that's my feelings.
Okay. That's a good feeling. Can we move back time? You mentioned how blessed we are to live here in America, and we are. Times are changing. Have you lived in Virginia your entire life?
No, I was born in Washington, D.C., about a block from the Capitol building, and I lived about a mile or two inside the District of Columbia, and then my parents moved about a mile outside of the District of Columbia into Maryland. So I went to school in Maryland schools, went to college at NC State, and then moved to Virginia to take a job when I came out of college. And so I've been here probably longer than you, than twice your age. I've been here 47 years, so I got here as fast as I could. Okay, I love being down here. I would never go back up to D.C. or Maryland again. This is North Carolina and Virginia are both wonderful states, so I've been here 47, 48 years.
Wow.
So.
Can you tell me a little bit of what it was like growing up in these locations, like the different locations from where you moved?
Growing up in D.C. area was a ball because when I was young, there wasn't a lot of criminality, I guess. I could take it 10 years old. I could take a bus downtown. I did this in the winter a lot because there was a hotel that had a public swimming pool inside. So I'd make a 10-cent drive the bus downtown and pay 10 cents to go swimming and come back by myself. You know, you can't let a 10-year-old kid in a big city now, you know, get on a bus and go 10 or 15 miles and expect them to come home alive or all in one piece. So that was a lot of fun. And D.C. is a very small town. It really is compared to a New York or Chicago or L.A. So it was fun because you was around. It's a hick town. It really was. It was a long time before the Kennedy Center was built, and also the joke in D.C. was, if you want to have a good time in D.C., go to New York. So that was a standard because there wasn't a lot of plays or, you know, or thing outlets at that time. So, but I enjoyed it. I'm probably one of the last generations to live in D.C. and be able to move about. You go up there now, and all the barriers because of the terrorists. You can't drive near buildings. I could get anywhere in D.C. I knew where everything was. I drove right into the riot area after the riots back in the 60s and knew how far I could get into the riot area and back out and all. But now everything is just, you know, the terrorists are winning, I guess, just because they've changed our lifestyle. So, but back then it was fun. So it was, like I say, my generation might have been one of the last generations to really enjoy growing up in D.C. area.
Sound like a good time. Can you tell me more about the hangout areas? Like, where did you hang out most?
DC's liquor laws were such that at 18 you could drink beer or wine. My uncle owned one of the most liberal restaurants in town, so we could get in there at 16 and have a drink or two. So, you know, we hung out there, then we'd go down, you know, down to M Street, where some of the bars were, where you could listen to some music and things like that. But it was mostly, growing up, it was mostly playing sports, you know, playing football, swimming competitively and things like that. So hung out in southeast Washington, D.C., which it's a very dangerous place now, but back then it was not. Is that what you're, is that?
Oh, yeah, you're doing fine.
Okay.
Can you tell me about your friends? Some of your friends that you'd hang out with? What'd you guys do? Where'd you go? Who'd you hang out with?
On our street, I think there was one girl our age, and there's like 9 of us boys. So if you want to play ball, or if you want to go out and have a rock fight or dirt, you know, whatever you want to do, you know, you just walk out the street and you have, you know, things to do. And most of my friends were into sports. We didn't smoke. We drank a little bit in high school, but we didn't smoke because everybody was into one sport or the other. So, and I was in the, I swam in the summer, and other friends of mine played baseball and football. But you know, when we were home, we were playing football in the street, baseball in the street, whatever, you know, street ball. That's what we did a lot of, a whole bunch of. But growing up, just about everybody on this long street in this neighborhood was male.
Do you still keep in touch with these friends?
Mm-hmm. My next door neighbor, who's retired to Florida, and I keep in touch with him and his wife. And then the guy that lives on the other side of him, we touch base every once in a while. So, but not often. But the one next door, he and his wife came by last year and spent a few days with us. So I keep in touch with a few.
Did you transition around that time?
Or? Now remember, I'm not transitioned. I'm a crossdresser. So,
crossdresser.
Yeah, so I'm fully male.
Did you crossdress at that time?
I started crossdressing at 6 years old.
Oh, okay.
My mom and dad worked, and I was a latchkey kid. So when I came home from school, I could get into mom's makeup, mom's clothes, and then have to remember, okay, this bra was put here, and this lipstick was put over here. So I had to be, you know, careful to put everything back. I never knew if my mom or dad knew. Mom did dress me as a woman one time on Halloween, and I had a big Spanish skirt on, and I remember the white pull over your shoulders blouse and all. So I don't know if it was her idea for me to go out trick-or-treating as a girl, or if it was my idea, I don't, but that's a very vivid memory from about, and that was probably in fifth or sixth grade. But I remember from the time I was 6 or 7, when my parents were home, going through mom's stuff. I didn't have any only child, so I didn't have any sisters at all, so I had to go through her stuff.
Wow. No. That's bizarre to think.
But if you talk to 100 transgender, there are some that never put on a dress till they were in their 50s or 60s. I don't know what gave them the idea then. But most of them have the same history. It's young, it's keeping to themselves, it's dressing in their sister's or their mom's clothes, and then putting it away real quick because you might hear footsteps at the door or something, you know, it was all guilt, it was a guilt trip. It was a real, you know, because it was taboo. You thought you were a real sinner or thought you were really doing something wrong back then. So.
Did your parents ever find out that you...
Don't know. I don't know. I really don't. I gotta believe Mom had suspicions, you know. I think she would see some of her clothes maybe disorganized the way that she left them, or some of her makeup being used. I don't know. We never talked about that, so I don't know.
Can you tell me a little more about what your parents did?
We were probably either upper lower class or lower middle class. Dad was a meat cutter, and Mom was a nurse. So Mom was, you know, Mom had attended 3 years of college. At that time, it took 3 years to get your nursing degree instead of four. And so she was pretty much early on ahead of her times as being an independent woman, make her own money, you know, live her own life until she met Dad, you know, until they became married. Even then, she continued to work until she died, until she retired, rather. So we were, you know, it was interesting. Our community was kind of funny. It was a hilly community. The doctors and lawyers lived up here. We lived about right in the middle and down the bottom near the creek that separated us from Washington, D.C. was some of the smaller houses. So it was almost stratified.
Tears.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Wow. I need to
visit
this place.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I almost got caught one time. The first time I ever went outside of the house with makeup and clothes on. It was about 11 o'clock one night, and I rode around. And when I was coming back to my driveway, my next door neighbor and I, my best buddy, his dad, my dad, built a common driveway between the two houses. And I was just coming up the hill, gonna pull my driveway. Here he comes home from a date. So I pull my car over the side of the road, dive out of the car, go in the back door, you know, get undone, and then go back and retrieve the car. So He told me years later he knew. He because he asked me one time, we were probably 30 years old, and said, "Still wearing your mom's clothes?" I should have been a little bit braver. I should have told him, "No, I've got my own now." But that was the only time I got caught until I was married. So.
Were you afraid at that moment? I'm guessing you were, since you don't know.
I was terrified.
What was going through your mind?
Terrified. One of your first things you think about yourself when you're... Back then, it was a transvestite. We didn't know cross-dressers, we didn't know transgender. And look at my initials. Transvestite, TV, Trans Valentine. And that was I picked that name long before I really understood cross-dressing and what a cross-dresser was and how it was different. But what you do think at a young age and in high school, you think you're the only one. You think there's nobody else is doing this stuff. You've never seen anybody. I was on a business trip out to LA one time, and I know they did a lot of gender exploration and all. And I called them up. I said, if you'll help me out and kind of talk to me, I'll let you interview me. I'm transgender. I'm transvestite. They kind of laughed and hung up. I called them like I was the only one. This was going to be a big thrill for them. They're going to finally meet a transvestite. In LA, right? You would think. So, but you think you're the only one. You think so you really hide. You got to hide everything.
You introduced your fear. I was wondering what the most difficult period of your life was.
It was when you have a lot of projects when you're in school, college. You know what it's like, you got the pressures, you're always busy, so your mind doesn't wander too much towards dressing. But after I was married, I kept my stuff in a black bag. My wife bought a wig when we were married about a year or 2 weeks. I'd never had a wig, You know, I'd always put maybe a scarf or something on my head. And so I waited until about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I had to try that wig on. So I put the wig on and got into her makeup and got dressed in the bathroom. And then I heard, I won't do that. Then I heard, a knock on the door. And we had a child 1 year old. And so I was discovered. I won't say caught. Caught, this sounds like you've done something illegal, but I was discovered. She discovered I was cross-dresser after 1 year of marriage. So she's known for 46 years. And so the difficult time was when I did want to dress more, maybe in my 40s, I guess it was in the 40s, I just wanted some freedom, I needed some time, I needed some Trish time. It was hard to get, it was hard on her, and trying to get the kids where they would be out somewhere and all that. And I thought about suicide then. I just said, this is just not right. I would imagine most transgender people sometime in their life have given a thought to that until they figure out they're really blessed and it's a wonderful life. But so my wife and I found a psychiatrist up in Charlottesville. We were scared to even talk to somebody in Lynchburg. Lynchburg was where we were living. And so we went to a psychiatrist pretty much as our choose. And it was kind of nice because it took an hour or more to get up to the Charlottesville area where he was. And so they gave us an hour to talk about what we were going to talk about. And then we'd be with him for 50 minutes. And then it would give us an hour and a half to ride home and maybe stop, get some lunch, and talk about what we did talk about. So my motive for going to him was to make sure that he was able to really make my wife understand, this ain't going away. This is not, you don't just stop being transgender, no more than you stop being heterosexual or you stop being homosexual, whatever it is that you're at 5 or 6 year old, that's what you're going to be. And so I think she really understood, but having somebody else say it beside me helped a lot. And then he told me, he said, you need to join a transgender group. Just need to do that. And he says, I've got a patient, he's an airline pilot. And by being an airline pilot, it's really easy for him because every once a month he jumps on a plane free, goes out to San Francisco, and spends a weekend, you know, dressed with his girlfriends out there. And girlfriends meaning TG girls. No. Do you know the term GG?
No.
Generic girl.
What is it?
Generic girl. Born. Biological girl. Generic girl. So you got GGs and you got TGs. Transgender girls and GGs. So he would go out with his TG friends, transgender girls, and spend the weekend and all. He says, you need to find a place. So at the time we were living in Lynchburg, and you think about how conservative Lynchburg is, and largely due to the church there, there's no way that you're going to find, you were going to go to a psychiatrist or join a group of other transgender. I wouldn't even know how to found them. So we got on the internet and we found a group in Raleigh, found a group in Greensboro, found a group in Charlotte. And talked to the group in Charlotte, like what I was hearing. So we would go down there monthly to their meetings and spend the weekend in Charlotte. And it was Kappa Beta was the name of the group, K-A-P-P-A, capital B-E-T-A. Kappa Beta was the girls' group down there. It had been there for a number of years. So it was a pretty good size group, you know, 20, 30 people in the group. And so that helped a lot.
So as equally as difficult this period was, you feel like it helped you too?
Yeah, the difficulty was before before meeting the psychiatrist, and then the easy part was coming out of that. Because we would go up, we only probably went up maybe 4 or 5 times. We, in our schedule, we'd call and just say, hey, we want to come up again. So we'd go up. It wasn't like we're meeting every 2 weeks or 2 times a week or anything. Like we maybe met with him once a month. And the first thing he suggested we do was go to... my mind will come back. It's the largest transgender conference in the United States. It's held in Atlanta. And it's for TG girls, TG guys. And so my wife and I went down and spent a week. And that was the first time I ever spent a week dressed. It was heaven, you know. And everybody there was transgender. So it was, and it took over the whole Sheraton. I mean, it's like 800 people. And it's every year it's held. So he suggested go down there first and then find a group. Then life became better because my wife is reluctantly tolerant, okay, about my dressing, but it became easier for her and she understood that I wanted to dress more than I was dressing at that time, and then so I was allowed to dress more, and then finally getting out of the house and joining a group and going to a meeting, and then driving all the way to Charlotte dressed, coming back dressed, spending the whole weekend dressed. That was nice, you know. So that the whole world turned upside down once we got some good input from the instructor. So Southern Comfort is the name of the group. It's the name of the yearly convention down in Atlanta, and it's huge.
I was going to ask, but I wasn't sure.
Yes, Southern Comfort. Because
I've heard about it, but yeah. I have some family that lives there.
I don't go to group meetings anymore, and rarely get on the internet to find other girls or anything. People like Virginia and I, we call each other instead of we do things together. So it's much more fun doing something normal, going out to dinner, not going to a meeting and sitting in a hotel room with 20 other transgender girls. You know, that got to be over pretty quickly. But I go every once in a while. I went down to Asheville recently to meet some girls I had talked to online for years and years, and we did that a couple months ago. So, but not as a constant thing. So, it's much more enjoyable doing things that a normal woman would do. So, Diana goes shopping. I love Dress Barn. Dress Barn is, I guess, trains their salespeople to be very accepting. And it's something about women liking to dress men. I don't shop in women's clothes when I'm dressed as a man, but when I'm dressed as a woman and go in the Dress Barn, oh, let me get you this. This will look good on you here, and they're bringing stuff to the dressing room and all. So it's a lot of fun. So doing things with my wife as a woman is not a great deal for her, a fun for her, but it's a lot of fun for me. You know, we go out. We'll go. I spend a week with her and a girlfriend down in one of our best friends who's female. The three of us went down to Key West for a week, and I never put on a man's clothing the whole week. And, you know, travel. It's my first travel in a plane dress. So, you want to hear a funny story about that?
Yes.
So my girlfriend, who's I grew up with, who's down here at rehab down the street, that first grade on. I said, "Hey, I'm going to come over. I'm going to find out if there's any trouble getting on the plane." So we're going to go over. We're going to interview some of the TSA. And we're going to go up to the counter, and we're going to go. So we went over there, and they said, "You know, we don't care. We don't care how you dress. We'll just have your identification. Don't come with any fake identification. Bring your male identification. So, and you're not going to get any static from us." So now it's time to go to Key West. So we get drop the car off in the parking lot out at Roanoke Airport. Get all our stuff. Go in. Go to check in, and Diane goes through, and I'm behind her, and the guy says, "Let me see your ID." And I have to get in my male ID. He said, "You're not so-and-so." I said, "Oh, yes, I am." And he says, "Well, I've heard of you, but I've never met one. So now I'm one." That was my new name, One. And so I think he winked at the girl. It was a beautiful woman. It's a little statuous woman on the other side of the metal detector. He must have winked at her because she said, "Would you sit over there for a minute? She pulled me out of the group. So she had me sit right by the thing while everybody paraded by. And then she said, "Take off your shoes, come on through." And then she sent me over to a guy that examined my shoes. You know, they wanted to put me through the full deal. So, but I had been out on my own enough by then that it didn't faze me. And if you give somebody a chuckle, it's okay. It's all right. But the gentleman looking at my male driver's license, and then saying, "Oh, I've heard of you guys, but I've never met one." So I said, "We met one now."
That's the main thing, just exposure, getting exposure.
Yeah, and every time, it's like anything, just a little bit easier each time. But I've been lucky enough so far that I've not been confronted, I guess. Everybody's always treated me nice, so I haven't had any confrontation. One time, a transgender girlfriend, my wife and I, went out to Las Vegas. We had a free room for a week we'd gotten. So I didn't fly that. No, I did fly. I flew that time to transgender. And I was going from slot machine to slot machine. I saw a place I wanted to go, and I had to go through two rows of slot machine. There was a little opening. And I think this guy had probably been trying to wait for this. He tried to come through at the same time I did. And he said, "Oh, excuse me, sir." He made sure his sir was very loud. But sitting at a blackjack table with other people, they were kind of giving me this. Then once they found out I had a personality, and also we sat there, and I just kind of blended into the woodwork. But at first, if people haven't been around somebody transgender, then they're, put off usually by it.
Yeah, that's the most difficult part.
Is that right?
That's the most difficult part.
Yeah.
Just getting people to meet you.
Right, getting past that first thing.
Getting past the judgment. But can you tell me about, I'm curious about your wife. Can you tell me about her?
Yeah, she's a wonderful mother of our two children.
What are their names? What are their names?
I don't want to do that. We haven't shared this with anybody in the family except cousins.
Gotcha.
And it took me a long time before I ever told my best male friend.
Yeah.
And that's
I completely forgot. I'm getting into it.
So they're in their 40s now. So and my grandson doesn't know. Neither one of my grandsons, of course, know. But our close-knit friends, all the women know. One of the close-knit couples, the wife has died, and the man doesn't know, but his daughter is homosexual. And I want to tell her so bad, but they're friends with my daughters. And I don't want to burden them with a secret.
Yeah.
Okay, we went down for this past weekend, our 40th birthday party, and she's married, and she has two children. She was artificially inseminated, and then when you do that, you get to reserve some sperm so that your two children have the same father. Not only are they the same mother, but they have the same father. So after the law was passed, her and her long-term partner got married and they have two children. So it went down. But I want to tell her so much, and she knows how supportive I am. But she had figured out all the reasons why. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
But my wife is she's college educated. She's accepting. It's just she has so much fear about somebody finding out. She just, you know, would tear her up. One of the reasons I think we raised our children so they'd be very accepting, but they have kind of redneck husbands. So, you know, and I have wonderful son-in-law, so I don't want to ruin the relationship there. I'm afraid they would. I don't know how they would accept that. Just don't know. So she's an enabler. You know, she's kind of fun. She's reluctantly accepted, but sometimes she'll come home and say, "Look at this beautiful skirt I found for you." And so she'll bring stuff home, and she lets me wear her clothes. We have the same size fingers, so we trade rings back. That's her initial ring. So we trade jewelry back and forth. So she's, even though she's reluctantly accepting, you know, sometimes it just happened because she's very accepting, but then she goes back to where she was. It's kind of just in fear that somebody will find out. So.
Where'd you guys meet?
Yeah, when I was at NC State, I had a pal, and she and I palled around together. If neither one of us had a date, we'd get together, go to a ball game, or go out together, you know. And I asked Gwen, I said, "Gwen, I really, really look," and I said, "for somebody really nice to date." And so she brought Diane up. And I shouldn't have mentioned that name, but she brought my wife up. And when my wife came up from another town to Raleigh, and when she walked in the door, I knew she was going to be my wife, no doubt. So she was. She became. I only asked one person in the world to marry me, and that was her. She told me no, so I didn't do any more asking. I just told her, this is the way it's going to be. We're getting married, so we did.
Can you tell me about moving completely different ballpark, Ladies and Gents? Can you tell me about working with them? I believe that you've worked with them at some point.
Work with what?
Ladies and Gents of the Blue Ridge.
Oh, I joined that group. And Tazi, T-A-Z-I, Tazi, formed a group. And I don't know, I still can't remember how I came across Tazi. But Tazi came to town and had a job here and was transgender, and she decided she wanted to form a group. So she formed Ladies of the Blue Ridge, and we would meet over at the MCC church over there on Elm Avenue, or where Elm and Bulletin on 8th Avenue. We'd meet over there once a month, and we had about four or five of us was all we had. And so I stayed with them a little while. But it's interesting that sometimes there's a power struggle. I can see a power struggle. People who have never maybe been president of some little group or something, all of a sudden they think, "Oh man, if I could be president of a transgender group, that'd be a lot of power." I could just see that there were some people that wanted to take over the group when Tazi was moving out of town. And so I kind of backed off, and I was on the board, and I said, you know, I just got to get off the board. I didn't tell them why, but sure enough, a big cat fight broke out. And so I've stayed friends with a few of the girls in Ladies of the Blue Ridge, but I don't attend their meetings anymore or anything. And I see them at Pride in the park, and there's no animosity between me and them. I just didn't need all the drama.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Gotcha. I'm going to ask two more questions,
okay,
and then it's just whatever you want to throw at me, you can do.
Right. Like I said, I don't know if anything you could ask that I wouldn't want to respond to. So,
what change do you want to see regarding sexual orientation?
What?
Regarding sexual
orientation. What did you say before that?
What change?
My sexual orientation?
Yeah. What change just with the general public? Everything.
I would change the general public.
Yeah.
I was going to say, because my my sexual orientation is heterosexual, okay? Mm-hmm. Which a lot of people find strange that you're going to be one. There's a. I should have brought my. I've just finished a document called 60 Million Reasons Why Ted Cruz Won't Become President Ever. And the 60 million reasons are, and I'll name all 60 million. Let's assume that 3 to 10% of the America's population, or maybe the world's population, is either LGBT. Mm-hmm. So let's take 5% as a easy number. 300 million Americans, if you take 10%, that's 30 million. Half of that's 5%. So there's probably 15 million LGBT folk in the United States. Surprisingly, each one of them has two parents. So that's another 30 million people. So we have 15 million transgender or homosexual. We have parents of transgender or homoparent. And on the average, every one of them has a brother or sister. There's another 15 million. So there's 60 million people in the United States that are either homosexual, bisexual, transgender, or parents of homosexual, transgender, you know, so on, or brothers or sisters. And this doesn't even count the children, because a lot of transgender and a lot of homosexual people have children. So not even counting those, we've got 60 million people that have a reason not to vote for somebody that says, the first thing I want to do is turn over the same-sex marriage law. So that's about, it's a three-page document. I really went, wow, so the thing that I would like to see Christians become Christian. If you read the New Testament, I brought everything that Jesus said against homosexuals, I wrote down this piece of paper. That's the total New Testament that Jesus wrote against homosexuals. Zero. Zero. And so I look at these people who are so homophobic, I look at them as being Old Testament Gentiles, not Christians. And I'd like to see the Christian faith really become inclusive. I'd like to see America become inclusive and not try to divide us up into little boxes and groups. And just accept people for what they are. So is that the question? I don't know if I answered a different question or not.
You answered it perfectly.
Okay.
I feel like people sometimes read too deeply into the Bible. And I think people read too deeply into the Bible.
And make up their own stuff, too.
Exactly. You know, make up fillers.
Right.
Tons of fillers.
If you think about it, and this is, I got this from my pastor. If you think about it, before printing presses, they had a room full of monks, and they would start copying the Bible, and so that they could hand out. There was no printing press, and you know some editorial comments got in there. You know, there's only two people that talk about homosexuality in the Bible, and that's Moses and Paul. Paul talks about it in the New Testament. Jesus doesn't. So, you know, or were these two homophobes? Did they really say that? Did a monk who had some problems, you know, write this in? So, it's hard to look at the Bible literally, but just to, if you look at the Bible and try to gather what it's trying to say in a broad sense, it would make a lot more sense to me rather than trying to use it for your agenda, whatever agenda you have. So, that's just my opinion.
Could pick anything from the Bible and just come up with your own interpretation. But all right, that's all I have. But this is, I guess, your time to talk freely about anything else you want to add or contribute. I know it's very broad, but anything you want to say.
I'm trying to think of something that would be of importance. You haven't asked the one question I thought you'd ask.
What question is that?
Why?
Why?
Yeah. Is it nurture of nature?
That is a good question. Yeah. See, this is why I ask you this.
So, nobody knows. Nobody has a clue. You know, I don't know if my mom dressed me as a little girl because she wanted a little girl, and therefore I thought I was supposed to dress as a little girl to please my parents, or are my genes such that there's something in my brain or something that just has, you know, more feminine. You know, when somebody closes their eyes, they know what gender they are. You don't have to look into a mirror. You don't have to look into a mirror. No, you know you're male. You know you're female. Okay, and you know, and I would go to bed at night and kind of pray that I'd wake up as a girl. And then I knew when I was older, there must be ovaries or something in here. You know, I thought maybe I was intersexed because I didn't know about transgender so much at that time. So it just, so nobody knows, as far as I know, nobody knows why. But I think it's the same thing with homosexuals. I don't know if it's nature or nurture that makes a person, you know, homosexual. You know, just like what makes a person right-handed or left-handed. So, let me see if there's anything else I want to... I guess from a transgender perspective, the funny part about transgender acceptance, do you know what the big issue is?
Yeah.
It's bathrooms. It's always bathrooms. And I have a friend that's works at NC State, and she's graduated from NC State. And, you know, they finally said, you know, you have to go up to a second floor into a family-type bathroom, not a men's, women's. And she finally accepted that. And you would never know she was born male. She's fully transitioned and all. So the bathroom issue is always an issue. So I'll put you on a spot. Have you ever been in a woman's bathroom?
When I was a kid, yeah.
Okay. If you walk into a woman's bathroom, there's no way that you can be a voyeur. You know, people think it's a voyeuristic thing, that they want to see something. A man's bathroom, you got a bunch of stalls, and you all sit there, and you stand up beside each other, and you take a leak. That's no big deal. A woman's bathroom is a very private place, and it's funny, I don't know how many women know that there's a man sitting on the commode next to him, you know. But I don't go in there for any reason. If I see a woman taking a young child in, I would never go behind them. I try to go in, do my business, and get the heck out. So the bathroom issue is really funny. It's a joke because it's being legislated mostly by males, and males don't know anything about what's in a woman's, you know, bathroom. You go in, you do your thing, you get the heck out. So the bathroom issue is kind of funny. I think maybe someday it'll be a male-female family and then trans, or, you know, just a separate bathroom. And, you know, I'd rather go into a separate bathroom. I don't want to put anybody ill at ease. I don't get any thrill out of going into a woman's bathroom. I'm not going to go into a men's bathroom like this. That wouldn't be too bright, you know. So.
Well, that's the thing. I've always noticed that, too. I've never been able to tell somebody who cross-dresses. Sometimes men, they dress as a female, they look just as beautiful as a woman.
Yeah, there's a lot of
you
men,
can't
you know,
tell.
Right, and I like to think I have, you know, instead of gaydar, I like to think I have transdar, but sometimes I can't tell. One of the women in the LBR, first meeting I went to, I was trying to figure out why she was there. Well, maybe she's the wife of one of the other people. And so Dolly, if you've met Dolly before,
of course.
Dolly is very attractive and be very hard to tell, you know, unless you're really looking for it. So, I was telling Teddy earlier, are you aware of about a group called the Red Hats group? It's a group of older women who get together for no other reason than a party. I mean, you know, they wear red hats, they wear purple dresses and all, and they're all in their 60s. So I've been invited to a couple times to have dinner with them. And some know, some don't. And I sat and talked to an 80-year-old woman for an hour and a half, this far away, during dinner. She showed me all her grandchildren, her great-grandchildren. We talked for an hour and a half. And I found out from my friend who was head of the group, she said she never knew, you know. But I don't think I passed. I think I'm trying to blend. I don't try to stand out. I don't go with pink hair and, you know, and short skirts to here and all. I try to blend. I try not to draw attention. There's a lady today that showed me the way to the bathroom. When I got here, I was, you know, after an hour and a half drive, I had to get to the bathroom. And I'd asked the lady behind the desk, and then an older woman had heard me, probably a teacher, had heard me ask. And so she came over and kind of walked alongside. She said, just go through here and go back there. So I don't know if she knew or not. Don't know. So I don't know if anything else to tell you. If you've got other questions, it's fine.
I do have one more, actually. And I apologize for my blindness. I didn't realize that you were cross-dresser. I didn't realize the difference. I was thinking more transgender, corrective surgery. So when you said you were getting surgery, I thought that was for another reason.
No, okay, no. No, I had, years ago, prostate cancer, and they put radioactive seeds in your prostate that kills the prostate. And radioactivity is kind of funny. It also causes cancer, so it caused some cancer in my bladder, and they were working on that, but it's very minor. Everything's going to be okay. So that was it. I have had some surgery. I've had my eyes done. So I've had my face lifted, but when I lost weight, I wrinkled up again. You know, I got something to get another one. And I've had electrolysis for over 5 years. So I have very little hair. I shave maybe once a month or something like that. And I go back, just, you know, hair start popping out every once in a while. So I go back. I went last Wednesday, and first time in 5 months, I guess, to have her pull some more hairs out. So when you say transition, have you had any surgery? What are you doing in your transition? Well, I got tired of having a beard show. I didn't want, if I was going to go out in public, I don't want, you know, a beard. So I went through electrolysis for 5 years, and then I've had some facial operations.
What's the point is to feel comfortable, fit in, and do whatever you can to
right.
do that.
I just felt anything. Yeah, the more, the closer I could become, the further I could wait, I could be from male, I guess is a better way to say it. It was better. So. And back to the bathroom issue.
Yeah.
When I go to the bathroom in a public place, the first thing I do is look down to make sure what I'm wearing. Because, you know, I'm like maybe 10% female and 90% male most of the time, so I have to make sure I'm walking the wrong room.
I get confused just dressed as myself, too. I'm like walking to the wrong bathroom. Crazy.
I'm trying to think. I don't know if there's anything that you... I see what I do with it. I thought I had some things about some of North Carolina. I'll send it to you. About some of the North Carolina organizations in there. I want to stress that, you know, there's a lot of history in Southwest Virginia happens elsewhere because we had to go somewhere else. So that stress that. I've got some somewhere. Don't worry about it. And I've got some headshots in here. I've got some shots if you want.
Yes.
Is now the time to do that?
Yeah, sure.
I don't know if you want.
We could, yeah.
That's Miss Virginia. She sent me that, so.